I'm Eric Allen for KLCC. Carol Burnett stands as one of the all-time legends of comedy, including her groundbreaking run with The Carol Burnett Show on TV from 1967 to 1978. She's netted multiple Emmy and Golden Globe Awards, was awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom in 2005, and the Mark Twain Prize for American Humor in 2013, definitely earning her star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. She just turned 81 years old on April 26th, and she's still on the road doing question and answer shows with the audience, much as she did in her TV shows. She'll bring Laughter and Reflection with Carol Burnett to the Halt Center in Eugene on Wednesday, May 7th, presented by the Shedd Institute. And she joins me at KLCC from her home in Santa Barbara. Thanks for taking a few minutes today, Carol.
Hi there.
It's an honor, certainly.
Well, thank you, Eric.
Since the show is improv, I thought it would be interesting, actually, to ask some of the people I know what questions they had for you. So I did so on Facebook, and if you're game for a few questions from my audience as well, this will represent the spirit of the show.
That's perfect, Eric. Sure.
So first of all, you just had a birthday, so congratulations.
Well, thank you.
What's funny about being 81 years old?
It's just funny because one doesn't feel it. You know, you don't feel it at all. And, you know, I certainly when I look in the mirror, I can see it and everything. But as far as how I feel inside, somebody once asked me, well, how old do you really think you are inside? And I said, 11.
And what characterizes being 11 years old in your
perspective? Well, that was before you started to hit puberty, and life was still kind of wonderful and fun and lots of games, and I roller skated and played and play acted and so forth. And I think that's when the bug bit me about wanting to be a performer.
I did have someone ask me, at what age did you realize that you were funny?
Well, actually, that I could get a laugh out of an audience, it wasn't until I was in college. When I was a kid, I mean, I loved play acting and going to the movies and coming back and playing them out with the kids in the neighborhood. But I never thought of the humor or anything like that. First, I thought I'd be a cartoonist. I wanted to have my own comic strip and draw it and create it. Then I got on the Hollywood High School. I was the editor of my Hollywood High News, and I thought, well, I might want to be a journalist, and I love to write. And so when I got to UCLA, they didn't have a major in journalism. So I majored in a thing called Theater Arts English, which would give me playwriting courses and so forth. But as a freshman, you had to take an acting class. So I took this acting class, and I was terrified, and I had to get up and do a scene. So I picked something that was lightweight, and I heard them laughing where they should, you know. And I thought, whoa, I like that feeling. So I tried out for some of the student-written one-act plays, and I got cast. And things started to just happen for me. I'd always been pretty much of a nerd. Now some of the seniors and they would come up because they'd seen me in one of the shows on campus and say, hey, can you come and have lunch with us and so forth. So I started to feel popular, and I came out of my shell, and I've been out of it ever since.
Well, Tommy says, so much comedy is coarse today, but yours never was and yet still holds up. Tommy wants to know if you have any advice for young comedians in terms of what's the secret to staying funny without working blue?
Well, it's difficult because working blue is the easiest way to get a laugh. And so stick to your guns. Watch Billy Crystal, you know, when he did the HBO show.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing blue about that. Watch Ellen DeGeneres when she had her HBO special. It was all about life as we know it, crazy little things that happen. Watch Bill Cosby. It's writing stuff that you know that is funny inside where you're not going for a cheap laugh. I talk about some of the television shows of yesteryear, and I don't want to sound like an old fogey, but when you look at, for instance, our Saturday night lineup, we had All in the Family, MASH, Mary Tyler Moore, Bob Newhart, and us. And there wasn't one blue thing in any of those shows, and yet they hold up today because they were very funny. A lot of times people don't know what they've missed. So they're seeing this now, and they don't know what it could be. Our show is on YouTube. And I'm starting to get mail, get this, from 10-year-olds and teenagers and people in their 20s who weren't even born when we finished doing our show. And inevitably, I would say 80% of the comments are, we wish these kinds of shows were on today. And then a lot of people will write and say, we watched this, I watched your show with my grandparents and or my parents, and it was appointment television, and the family all stayed. And it was funny. It wasn't, you know, treacly or anything like that. We had good writers, and we didn't stoop.
The iconic comedian Carol Burnett on KLCC. She's bringing Laughter and Reflection with Carol Burnett, a conversation with Carol where the audience asks the questions to the Hout Center in Eugene on May 7th. Well, Pauline acknowledges all the people's spirits you've kept up with your comedy and asks, who kept your spirits up when life was challenging?
I think I always felt pretty good about knowing that this too shall pass. I don't know how I came up with that as a kid, but it has held me in good stead. I remember when I went to New York to try to get into the business, I would go to auditions and so forth and, you know, get turned down, and that was what would happen quite often. And this one time, I was up for something, a Broadway show, just a little chorus thing, but it was a bit part, but a good little part. And it was between this one girl and me. And I really kind of thought I had it. And I didn't. She got it. And I don't know, and I thank whatever powers that be, I wasn't disappointed. What came to me was, it's not my turn. It was her turn, and my turn will come.
So often, when we don't get what we think we want, something else better comes along.
That's exactly what happened to me with that, because like a day later, I got a call to audition for a little show called Once Upon a Mattress, and that was my start in New York.
An absolute launch from Once Upon a Mattress. And then when you were finally given your own TV show and it was 1967, were you nervous about where it was going to go when it started?
No, I figured it'll go where it goes. I learned a lot doing the Gary Moore show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you just do the best you can and you throw it out there into the universe, and, you know, what sticks, sticks, and what doesn't, doesn't. And I remember getting Harvey and Vicky and Lyle and all of us together before that first show. And it was a kumbaya moment. And I just said, look, we're just going to have fun. That's the main thing. We've got to have fun. We're not going to be nervous about how it's received or anything. We're going to do the best we can, and that'll be that. It was a family, and we loved each other, and it showed. In the 11 years, there were never any blow-ups or, you know, hissy fits or diva-like moments from anybody.
A lack of ego, it seems to me, really serves really well in the creative world, whether it's in music or television. It's amazing how much ego can be in the way and what's clear when it's not there. Is this a case of that?
Absolutely. And the thing is, too, I wanted a real rep company, which meant that there would be sketches in which I'd just play the straight man and I would be supporting Tim or Harvey.
Mm-hmm.
Or we would all be supporting Vicky at one point, and then they would be supporting me in a sketch. So even though it had my name on it, it was a true rep company.
Since you mentioned Harvey or Tim, Russ wants to know, who was a better kisser, Harvey Korman or Tim Conway?
Well, I kissed Harvey more. You know, I don't think I kissed him too many times in a sketch. So I would have to say Harvey.
Michaela asks, do you still feel shy despite your outward command of the stage, or is that feeling a distant memory?
Well, I get a little nervous, you know, just before I have to go on. I think, and I think that's healthy in a way.
Well, nerves make a lot of sense to me, and nerves can certainly be channeled into positive energy when you're on stage
as well.
Well,
it's the good butterflies that you want, the good ones, not the ones that are going to freeze you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would imagine that is especially true in these kinds of shows where you don't come with prepared material, but you're up there to react to whatever questions you get.
So correct.
What do you do when there are no good questions?
The times that it's not good is when they don't ask a question, and they're very kind. They say, oh, we used to love your show, and da-da-da-da, but there's no question. And all I can do is say, well, thank you.
Tana says, what question do you wish you'd been asked over the years but never have been asked?
Whoa. Oh, well, maybe just a couple of weeks. No, but I'm very happily married. But if I weren't married, I would say, well, will you marry me, that George Clooney says. George Clooney comes to me and says, will you marry me, Carol? That would be a good question.
And there is a person who wants to know, if you ever were challenged by somebody that you worked with because you had such a crush on them or such an admiration of their work that it made it difficult?
No, that never happened, although I did have a sneaky little crush on Perry Como when he was on the show. He was so adorable and so loving and handsome and had a twinkle in his eye. I thought, oh, boy, he's pretty cute.
Carol Burnett on KLCC, coming to the Holt Center on May 7th with a show where the audience asks the questions and an audience question from Facebook. Patricia wants to know, do you worry about offending?
No, because I don't offend. I try not to. You know, I don't worry about it. I just don't think about it.
Are you still in shape for Tarzan Yells?
Oh, yes. I do them on this day. I won't do them now because there's somebody in the next room taking a nap. I did one once when they asked me to do it at a department store in New York years ago at Bergdorf Goodman, which is a very posh thing. And I remember the lady wouldn't cash my check. She needed some identification. And so I showed it to her, and she said, okay, but I'll okay your check if you do the Tarzan yell. Okay? So I did the Tarzan yell on the second floor of the lingerie department, and the exit door behind the woman burst open, and it was a security guard with a gun. We could have had our heads blown off. You know, I only do it now in controlled circumstances where people are expecting it.
And yet so much of your show in this form is based on the unexpected and the things. That's where a lot of humor is
right,
the unexpected.
Right. Yes.
So you have to find the correct boundaries of the unexpected to tread, mm-hmm. I imagine.
Right. There was one, this is years ago, so you have to remember this is about 7 or 8 years ago, and I was in Texas, and a lady raised her hand. She was way up in the balcony, and I called on her. She said, Carol, if you would be a member of the opposite sex for 24 hours and then pop back into being yourself again, who would you be and what would you do? Well.
Wow.
Yeah, wow. And I'm thinking, oh, heavens, you know, who would you be? Now, remember, this was 7 years ago, 7 or 8 years ago. And I said a little prayer to God. I said, okay, God, I'm going to open my mouth, and whatever comes out is going to be your fault. And I swear, Eric, what came out was, I'd be Osama bin Laden and I'd kill myself. And the audience went crazy, of course. You know, and I just, under my breath, I said, thank you, God. That was a good answer.
That was a good answer.
Good answer, good answer.
And even then, you didn't worry about offending.
Well, no. Of course, I might not have said that elsewhere in the in the world.
You know,
I wouldn't have lived to offend anymore.
Absolutely. You know, so many people want me to ask you about extremes, first, most memorable, et cetera. But my question is, what's the most average thing that ever happened to you in show business?
Well, average is just the way we did our show. In doing an hour variety show every week, we had it down to a science. We were so organized that I remember one interviewer once asked me to add up the hours I worked.
Ooh.
Each week. It was 30. That's like a part-time job.
Really, 30? I was going to guess about 80.
No, 30. Because we did it like a school schedule. I used to take my kids to school, then go to work. And then sometimes I'd be out in time to pick them up from school. We had dinner every night at 6 o'clock, except for the night we taped. We were highly, highly organized. In fact, the writers used to laugh and say it was the first show they ever worked on where they didn't have to drive home with their headlights on.
Oh.
And so that was an average thing. It was just a joy to go to work because we were never tired. We never worked those long 14, 15 hours that some shows work. And we did an hour, usually taped an hour and 15 minutes because we would go over a little bit because of the questions and answers. And we had dancing, finales, singing. I had sometimes as many as 9 costume changes in one show. Everybody else, same thing. You know, 28-piece orchestra, all of this stuff. We would be out of there and tape it in front of an audience. We'd tape maybe an hour and 15 minutes in maybe a little over 2 hours.
The musical aspect is one thing we definitely haven't talked about, and that's a big part of who you are as well. John wants to know, why not more musical releases over the years?
When we've went into syndication all those years ago, we couldn't do the musical numbers that we did. The cost would have been prohibitive. It was cut down to a half hour of just the sketches. But now we've got the DVDs came out last year, and those are the complete shows. So a lot of people had no idea that we did so many finales and, you know, 28-piece orchestra and all and dancing and singing and takeoffs on movie musicals and things like that. I remember Steve Lawrence, you know, who was one of my favorite guests. Not only could he sing, but he was funny. He was with me when we did a takeoff on Postman Always Rings Twice and Double Indemnity and African Queen, and that was all Stevie and me. And so when we were in syndication, Steve said one time he and his wife, Edie, were at the airport, and these teenagers ran up to him and said, "Oh, you're that funny guy on the Burnett Show." They had no idea he was a singer.
Carol Burnett on KLCC in advance of her show at the Halt Center on May 7th, Laughter and Reflection with Carol Burnett.
After all you've done and after all you've accomplished, what does it feel like inside to know that for so many people, their favorite childhood memory was watching your show?
It's very gratifying. I can't tell you. You know, it means a whole lot to me. And the fact that people remember, sometimes I get letters from young people, you know, in their 30s, 40s, whatever, who said that they had been depressed as a kid and that when they sat and watched the show with their parents or their grandparents, it cheered them up. And that's the nicest compliment that one can get.
That means that you've really affected someone's life in a real way.
Yeah. One girl sent me a whole video saying that she had an eating disorder and that she had at one point contemplated suicide. And that she had read about How I Love My Daughter, who passed away a few years ago of cancer. And then she watched our show a little bit on YouTube or whatever, and it cheered her up. And then she thought, I'm not going to kill myself because I know what it would do to my mother, because I know how she must feel, how you felt when you lost your daughter. And, I mean, I cried when I got it.
One never expects these sort of things.
No. Television is very powerful. And it's a great responsibility that I wish people would take more seriously in some of these shows, you know.
So what do you plan to do for the next 81 years?
Well, I'll just keep on trucking. You know, I like doing this, and I just finished filming in Vancouver. There's a new Hallmark series called Signed, Sealed, and Delivered, which is created by Martha Williamson, who created Touched by an Angel. Mm-hmm. So I just did a guest shot on that last week. And then I'm going to do another Hawaii 5-0 this year. I did a guest shot last year. And I'm starting to work on my fourth book.
And presumably at the end of every show, you still tug your ear to let
Absolutely.
You know your grandmother?
One time, years ago, it was measured by this interviewer, and it was like 2 or 3 millimeters longer than my right ear. I don't yank on it that hard anymore. I look like an elephant, like Dumbo.
Well, I'm sure your grandmother's glad to know somewhere that you're all right, and we're glad that you're all right, too. And we're honored to have you coming to join us in Oregon.
Thanks so much. I'm looking forward to it.
Okay, thanks, Carol, so much.
Thanks, Eric.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye, dear.
Carol Burnett, truly one of comedy's legends, still very much alive and well at 81 years old. She's touring with her show called Laughter and Reflection with Carol Burnett, a conversation with Carol where the audience asks the questions. It will be presented at the Halt Center in Eugene by the John G. Shedd Institute for the Arts on Wednesday, May 7th at 7:30 p.m. For tickets and information, theshedd.org or haltcenter.org. For KLCC, I'm Eric Allen.